Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back to the News Talk TY Takeover. I'm Jack Dillon, and in the next part of the show, we will be discussing underage gambling and how it can easily lead to addiction and the effect it has on people's lives. We went out to Grafton Street in the centre of Dublin to get the views of regular people on this issue and their personal experiences about gambling.
We are 18.
Have you ever placed a bet in your life?
Yeah.
What sport was it on?
Football and cricket.
What age were you when you did that?
Just like yesterday. A day
back. Literally yesterday?
Yeah, man.
Did you do any before, no?
Yeah, I've been doing it like...
So like every
one
day?
Month. 1 month I've been doing it.
Ah, fair enough.
But I just put like a euro or something.
Ah, okay, yeah. Did you win?
Yeah, I won 3 euros yesterday.
About 3 euro. Did you feel like happy about yourself after
that? I did.
Did you place another one after, like the day after again?
I'll see. Today's UEFA Champions League, so I'll probably play some bets today also.
Do you feel like you're going to get addicted eventually if you do too often?
No, man. I can literally stop tomorrow if you tell me.
Have you ever placed a bet before?
I have.
Have you done it like before when you're like underage or anything?
Oh, I would have, yeah.
Yeah, like what age is kind of
16, 17.
Yeah. Was that in like an actual betting shop or was it like at the races?
Ah, betting shop. Yeah.
Betting shop, really?
Too old for that.
Yeah, fair enough. Did you ask for ID or anything?
No.
No, I just walked in.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you looked old enough to be 18 to...
Probably, yeah.
Did you have time,
yeah.
What would you feel would be like the point where it'd be considered addiction?
If you're doing it every day of the week.
What age were you when you first placed your first bet?
I'd say in the teens, early teens.
Under 18, yeah?
Under 18, definitely, yeah.
Was it in a betting office or was that the like races or what?
Yeah, it was in the bookies, yeah.
Bookies, yeah. Did you get asked for ID?
No.
Did you feel like you got addicted at one point there?
Yeah. The wind's addicting, yeah. The wind's addicting.
What point did you kind of realise I need to stop a bit?
When I wasn't winning enough.
Fair enough. At what point would you consider like addiction, you know?
Anything over 100 quid a day.
When I go to the races, I would place a bet.
What was the first time you did that?
The first time, I suppose in my 20s.
Do you know anyone that got like addicted to gambling?
Yes, I do.
Yes. Have they like come back from that? As in they stopped?
They have come back, but it destroyed their life and their marriage, and I think it's too easy to gamble. I really do.
Yeah. At what point would you consider it addiction? Like
when you have to put on a bet.
Yeah.
I only put on the bet because I was at the races.
Yeah. So.
But I wouldn't go to the bookies.
Alright guys, I think that was outrageous. Like over 100 quid a day is considered an addiction, especially compared to the 1 euro a day. Like what do we think of that?
I mean 100 quid a week or 100 quid a day, sorry, is outrageous. You know, food off the table.
Like 100 quid a week is a lot, let alone 100 quid a day. Like you're losing 700 quid a week out of your wages just on gambling alone. Like,
yeah, like they said it all, it's like mad. But I also think the woman that was, then she knew someone who lost their house and their marriage, that's also mad because, you know, that's ruining their life because gambling.
What do you think of the no IDs, especially when you're younger, you know, like no one got asked for ID?
I think like it was a while ago for some of them, but like they all said it, even like the big difference in age, like there were people who were like probably in their 20s or 30s and like people who were probably in their 60s, 70s, and they all kind of had the same sort of story, so it shows there's a bit of a pattern there.
Yeah, as Travis said, there was loads of different people, but it really surprised me how many of them had gambled and how many of them were underage when they first gambled.
Picking up on that point, we're joined by Oisín McConville now, who had his own experience with gambling from a very young age.
So when did you first start gambling?
I had my first bet on the Grand National when I was 14 years of age. I walked in at that stage and I had 50p each way on a horse in the Grand National. And to be honest, there's a lot of people at my age would have been gambling on that particular day because it seemed very acceptable to gamble on the Grand National. Everybody seemed to do it, so that was when I started.
Do you think it's too easy for you, for young people to start gambling?
Well, I suppose if you think of back then, that was, 14 years, so that was the late 80s, so 89, early 90s. It was quite easy to walk into bookmakers. It didn't really matter what age you were. And I think it's just got more accessible since. you know, the accessibility through the phone, there's no real, I know there's an age limit of 18 on it, but like those checks and stuff are not being done properly, especially in this country. So I think it's probably easier than it's ever been for young people to gamble. Like, it was easy for me, but I had to literally walk into a bookies now. I don't know how many 14-year-olds nowadays would walk into a bookies and get a bet on. I don't know if that has changed significantly.
Oh,
but
yeah. Speaking about that, we had the little experiment yesterday. Yeah. Where we walked into the local bookies around the area, and we walked in, and we were literally turned away nearly at the door. We went to two local ones. To be fair, I might look the age of it. I don't know about Jack Kerr.
Yeah, I'll probably look a bit too young for it, but it's definitely
easy. And Camille, were you wearing uniforms, right?
No, we were wearing jeans and a jacket. That was it. We just walked in, you know.
Well, that's definitely a plus, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you were turned away.
Like, it was literally at the door. We only tried two of them, though, but we were fairly happy with that. And we also tried doing it online as well.
Right.
One of the apps, it didn't even ask us. It just literally was tick the box for ID, like no ID needed. It was just tick the box. What do you think of that? Is that like too easy, or do you think they should be doing more ID checks online? Or
it's pathetic. There are some sites that will check, but the majority of them will ask you, are you over 18? To which you answer yes. I mean, they never ask for ID. They never follow up for ID. A lot of them will say you need ID within 24, 48 hours, but that actually never happens. So I think as much as there's a massive responsibility on bookmakers, there's also a huge responsibility on the politicians, on government, because we have very little regulation and very little legislation in this country. So in that regard, I think, you know, there's very little being done, and especially for those who are problem gamblers.
What was your biggest win and your biggest loss as well?
Biggest win about, I don't know why this figure kept popping up, but on 10, 11, 12 occasions, I won £45,000. And my biggest bet was my second last bet, which was £20,000 on a horse. And I suppose, why was it such a big bet? I suppose because I was trying to tell myself that if I got one big win, you know, I'd pay off all the debts I had and I'd start my life all over again, sort of thing. So yeah, so like that was never going to happen, but that's what I had convinced myself, at that time. So that's why that was such a large bet.
So was it around then where you realised you had a bit of a problem with gambling?
No, I probably knew for the last 3-4 years of my gambling that I had an issue. I probably realistically even knew what I had to do in order to get to the other side of it. And to get into recovery, but I just never had the courage to do that. So I probably had an idea for the last 3 or 4 years, but unless I was willing to do something about it, it's okay me knowing, but until I actually shared that with somebody, told somebody, then things were never going to change for me, because I had always this brilliant capacity and this brilliant ability to tell myself that, you know, the next time would be different, I'd gamble differently, I'd the outcome would be definitely a gamble on different things and my gambling would change, but the outcomes were always the same for me. So as a compulsive gambler, it always going to be like I could win money, you know, I could be, you know, pretty flush and 20 minutes later, like I wouldn't have enough to buy myself a sandwich, you know. So that's the way my life was. It was compulsive, but I always had this ability to tell myself that I could change and it was going to be different, but there's no way I could change until I actually shared that with somebody else, and somebody else tried to reason with me or tried to let me see the error of my ways, I suppose. And that's why treatment for me was so important, because give me an opportunity to stand back and look in my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And when I look back in at the life I was leading, I didn't want to lead that life. But yeah, so I had lots of false dawns, lots of times where I told myself that was it, I was never going to gamble again. But in reality, that was never going to happen until I shared it with somebody.
How did you like end up recovering? Was it from through talking to it, or was it like family members helping you out, or how did it happen?
Yeah. I basically come home from my last day's gambling and I broke down. I had no intention of breaking down, but I broke down because I couldn't handle the pressure anymore, the pressure of the people I owed money to, the pressure of the pressure of you know, what, needing to gamble all the time, you know, relationships break down, friendship breaking down, falling out with teammates, you know, basically everything. My life was, you know, not being able to hold down a job. So in that regard, you know, the walls were coming in around me, and I went home one day and I broke down, and I literally hadn't cried for 16 years with a physical pain or emotional pain. I started to cry, and once I started to cry, I started to tell my family what was going on, and a week later I was in the treatment center. And I suppose it took me a couple of weeks before I actually started to properly talk about it and probably hold my hands up and admit that I was a compulsive gambler, degenerate compulsive gambler even. And then I started to recover, started to talk about it, started to get a bit of counselling. You know, there was group therapy there. And I just decided I wanted to change my life. But I was scared because I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it or not. But with the help of a lot of people, with the help of Gamblers Anonymous and that, I have managed to turn my life around. I mean, it's 18 years since I had a bet now, and my life resembles nothing like it was then, but it was a tough journey, you know, even through recovery. Like, if I, you know, gambling was tough, definitely, you know, because it was a lot, there was a lot of dark days, but so was recovery. Recovery was tough because, you know, I was so scared that I was going to end up back gambling, and I knew, you know, if I did, there would be serious consequences because it's a progressive disease, same as alcohol, same as drugs. You know, the next time, like, you know, I would cause even more destruction, you know, whether that be, yes, financially, but also emotionally and relationships and everything else, you know.
Do you feel like this also affected you when you were playing GA on the pitch?
Well, I suppose this may sound dramatic to people, but at one stage, football was the only thing keeping me alive. It was the only thing that gave me any sense of worth and value. It was the only place where I felt, you know, comfortable other than the bookies. It was the only place where I felt, you know what, you know, I'm actually good at this. I never felt I was good at anything else. So it gave me a sense of purpose and worth. And as I say, it probably sounds dramatic, but that was the only thing keeping me alive at that stage. But there was times where going on to the pitch, like, I remember in 2004, we were playing an Ulster final in Croke Park, and on the way to Croke Park, I got a message from a loan shark that I borrowed money off to say that, watch me back, I was going to be got today. So, you know, I go into that match, and that's all I can think about, like, you know, and I don't actually watch back any of the matches that I played in, but I remember going specifically and seeking out that game and watching it and just not even recognising the lad that was running around the field, like, you know. So, it would have affected it at different times, but it also was a massive outlet for me, you know, and as I say, it gave me that sense of worth and value.
What, like, money did you gamble with? Like, where did you get the money from, like a job, or how did you get it?
Yeah, well, I suppose to begin with, it's like I started early, so it's like pocket money or, you know, part-time jobs or, you know, Christmas money or anything, but I never had any money from was 14 years of age, and the reason for that was that every penny I got, I gambled. And then I suppose I said to myself, you know, I did A-levels, which is basically leaving cert, probably equivalent for you guys. I did those exams, didn't do very well, but I probably still would have had the chance to go to do some college course if I wanted it, but I didn't want to do it. And the reason why I didn't want to do it is I wanted to earn money, because I thought my only issue with gambling was that I didn't have enough money. So when I left school, I got a job packing boxes in a factory in Newry, and, you know, whatever money I got at the weekend, I gamble it. Then I'd say to myself, well, I'm just not getting enough money, so I'll go to get another job, and that cycle kept going. And regardless of how much money I earned or how much money I had, I still gamble it. Then, you know, I took over a pub in Cavan, and it was doing quite well initially, because I probably was minding myself as far as gambling was concerned initially. Then I started gambling more. Then there was more access to money. I mean, you know, the bar was doing quite well, so, you know, I had an overdraft. You know, I started not paying players, different things like that. And that's where I got money off. And then, you know, credit union loans, you name a credit card, and I had it. Borrow money from teammates, friends, family members, acquaintances, loan sharks. You know, everything that I would get. Like, I remember, you know, I had a couple of sponsorship things when I was playing football, which, you know, weren't massive money, but it was nice money for somebody who was at my age and that. And I just remember just waiting on those checks to come in so I could get them changed as quick as possible and gamble them. You know what I mean? So it literally was every penny that came from everywhere. Like, I never bought anything for myself. Like, I mean, you know, I wore the same sort of clothes all the time. And, you know, I never holidayed. I didn't do the things that other people were doing because every penny I got, you know, was earmarked for gambling. And you know, I ended up, you know, stealing and begging and borrowing and hooking and scamming and scheming just basically just to get the money to have that fix, you know, to have that bet.
Yeah, and did this, like, affect relationships you had with the people that were close to you, like your family and your friends?
Yeah, look, I consistently pushed them away. And the reason for that was that I didn't want any of them knowing because I was embarrassed and ashamed of who I'd become. And I didn't want them knowing that, like, you know, that this was having the effect that it was having. And as a result of that, like, I definitely pushed them away. I had friends, yeah, but like I never seen them, never spent any time with them, and that was because, again, I was too ashamed. I was too ashamed of who I'd become, and I didn't want them to know the person that I was. You know, like, yes, I would go to football and all those sort of things, and I would call all of those boys, you know, friends of mine, but like when they went out after matches to, you know, celebrate or socialise or whatever, I mean, generally speaking, I wasn't there, and the reason why I wasn't there was because, you know, I wouldn't have money, or if I did have money, I'd be saving it for a bet that night or the next day or whatever. So, yeah, it left me quite isolated, and I suppose I alienated myself from a lot of people around me because of my addiction.
Yeah, that's
all right. Thank you so much for coming on
to the show.
No, well, the best luck with all the work experience and all that crack, all right?
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, cheers.
Good luck to yourself. No, well, lads, take it easy.
Big thanks to Oisin for coming on the show and sharing his story. We have Tom Lee now, who has 30 years of experience in the betting industry.
How did you get involved in the betting industry?
The betting industry, for me, that's a very, very good question and an astute one, because everybody thinks that there's some sort of carefully hatched plan. But for me, it was simply following my interests and my hobbies and trying to turn what I found stimulating and enjoyable in my spare time into a job. So I suppose if you say persistence, or even making a bit of a nuisance of yourself, going to the races, turning up, talking to people, networking, making contacts, and asking, being brave enough to just say, listen, what's available, what's out there, what do you need, what are you looking for? And for me, that was always being in and around the sort of the betting environment, the horse racing environment, the soccer environment, all those things fused together was what made me tick. So therefore, I knew what I wanted to do.
Can you kind of tell us a bit about how betting has changed through time, like from going to the races to placing bets online?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because actually, I'm lucky, because really when I was exactly 18 years of age, the first online bookmaker happened. And to begin with, people kind of turned their noses up at it and they said, yeah, good luck, this won't catch on. Well, boy, were they wrong, because actually now you look at the mixture of, you can still bet, obviously, on the high street, but people bet through tablet, through app, through mobile, through desktop. And of course, that's changed the face of the gambling landscape forever. So the big change really has been the advent of bookmakers being able to offer their services to people who now, through smartphones and devices, can do that absolutely anywhere.
Can you tell us a bit about kind of what precautions you have, or they have, on online gambling services to stop people who are underage from setting up accounts and placing bets?
Yeah, I see. I mean, I'm not a spokesman for any particular bookmaker, but there are, in much the same way that there are checks and balances about anything for underage people, you have to be able, there's a strict, all of the licensed and regulated betting companies in Britain and Ireland go through a very rigorous adherent policy that people have to be able to verify their account prior to opening to make sure that actually nobody's slipping through the net. So that, for example, you know, a 15-year-old couldn't just use their own Obviously, they wouldn't have a driver's license, but they couldn't use their passport because that would immediately be flagged up. That's a very obvious one. But there's a fairly strict vetting procedure that people have to go through. Certainly in Britain, it's like a KYC, know your client questionnaire, where people actually have to prove they are who they say they are before. And that's as relevant as whether you're 50 or whether you're 15. Certainly, I know that one of the companies that I use for having an occasional recreational soccer bet, for example, around about 4 years ago, I had to send them a copy of my passport, which some people find a bit invasive. But if it's what they've got to do to keep on the right side of the law, then so be it. No problem.
We just talked to Oisin McConville, who's had problems with gambling addiction over his life. We want to know, what would you personally consider like being addicted to gambling? At what point would you be considered an addict?
I don't think there's any way that you can qualify that. I think that's a very individual and personal thing. An addiction obviously takes many forms. People could be addicted, unfortunately and sadly, depending on a person's habits, preferences, mentality, weaknesses, desires, I suppose, and personality. People, and we know all about substances and alcohol and various medications, but another form of that potentially is gambling. So there is no sort of silver bullet where you can qualify that as an overall thing. But I guess really the point is it's affordability. And if people are falling into a place where, I mean, let's imagine that you happen to be lucky enough to have 10 million euros in your current account. Unlikely, but you never know. Somebody out there will do. Then if you happened to be losing, let's just say, for example, 50 euros a day, it's probably not going to hurt. If you haven't, I mean, but let's also be honest that if you haven't got a fiver is a lot of money. So I think it's a very individual and personal thing that somebody who is losing money that they can't afford, money that ought to be going on the household chores or the food shop or the heating, the gas, the lighting, the electric, the diesel that's going in the car, whatever it might be, then that potentially could be termed as addiction. But I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to that. I think that befits somebody's circumstances and should be taken very seriously.
Yeah. Would you say that bookies kind of have a responsibility to protect people and refuse service to people who they think might have some kind of gambling problem?
Yes, I do. Bookies certainly have a responsibility to, and bookies are very, very forthright in their advertising of carrying the correct messages, i.e., for example, in Britain, you will see a very prominent message, when the fun stops, stop. Fred Doane, one of the masters of the industry, one of the pioneers of the industry, he always says, one of his catchphrases, he says, keep it fun and friendly. You know, don't be getting too carried away there. He says, if you have a big win, take the wife out for a steak. If you have a couple of losers, just switch it off. Come back in a day, a week, a month. Keep it enjoyable. Keep it fun. Keep it friendly. And I would agree with that because bookies certainly do have a very, very important message to carry there. And the majority of them do that. It's finding the balance, isn't it? Because people don't want to be bullied. Let's not also forget that lots of people, and I think this is arguably the most important point, many, many, many tens of thousands of people in Britain and Ireland, they work very hard all week at whatever they might be doing. They pay tax on their money, rightly. But then their disposable income, whether or not they want to sign up to a leisure club, whether or not they want to book a flight, go for a meal, have a bet, go to the pub if they're of legal age, etc. All of those things, that's up to them. That's their choice. They shouldn't need to be nannied and bullied and told what to do with their money. Nonetheless, it's all about balance and proportional behaviour and responsibility on both sides. Responsibility from the bookie, but also responsibility from the customer. In the same way that a publican shouldn't be serving a visibly drunk person, well, you might be so drunk and intoxicated on gambling that you need to stop. So that messaging is important. But it's also very important that the individual, the customer, the punter, has a sense of perspective as well and is prepared to bet within limits and really be sensible.
One final question for you. What responsibility would you say governments have in the regulation of the gambling industry?
That's a really brilliant question. Government, this is only my personal opinion, but the government needs to be extremely careful not to override the gambling industry, which, going back to my previous answer, many, many, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people really get great enjoyment out of having a bet. It might be, depending on the individual, depending on how serious they are about it as a hobby, it might be 50 cent, it might be a euro, but it could be thousands of euros. And that could be enjoyable, and that could be very controlled, and that could be just part of a very healthy outlook on life for that individual. So the government needs to be very careful not to discourage those people whilst working sensibly alongside the betting operators to make a manageable playing field where punters are both encouraged but looked after at the same time. And that's the difficult balance to strike, because if the government's too overbearing and crushes the bookies and is too punitive, they're going to drive people away from that industry. If they make it too difficult, people will leave in their droves and take up doing something else. And that's what's in danger of happening at the moment.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I think that's all our questions there. You've been really great. You've given us some great answers.
That's no problem at all, lads. It's an absolute pleasure to help. Absolutely anytime. You know where I am.
Coming up next, we'll look at copyright and music.